You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 WILL Urbana. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. On the program today, our monthly show about computers. We take up this topic each month on the third Thursday of the month. Today, I invite your questions about computers for Peter Kimball of the University of Illinois. Peter is the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the University's Technology Consortium. If you've got a question, a comment, or a concern about computers, give us a call this afternoon. If you're listening in the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, if it would be a toll call, use the toll-free number, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. 333-9455 and 800-222-9455. Peter, welcome back to the program. Good to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you too, Celeste.
And we've already got some callers who are waiting to talk with us, so we're going to go first to our first caller this afternoon on line one. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Peter, when I try to print, I get a message that says, quote, there was a problem sending your document to the printer. Make sure the printer cable is connected and the printer is online. Well, I've checked the cables. I've removed them. I've replaced them. I checked the pins when I had them out. Pins are all straight. Everything seems to seat properly. I went to the settings in the control panel, and the printer icon indicates the printer's connected. And I just wonder what else I can do.
Do you have this problem when you try to print from any location, whether it's a word processor or any place else?
I have it all the time.
Okay, so there's no way that you can print from any place, essentially, without getting this message.
That's right.
And if you've checked all the cables and the printer is working properly, do we know that, I wonder?
Well, I don't know how you can check it. I mean, it's on, and I had printed like a day or so before I got this message and had no problems, and then, you know, several days later I went to use it and I got this message.
Well, from the little bit that we know so far, we can't really narrow it down yet to either software, which would be a driver problem, the little bit of software that sits between – is this on a Windows machine?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That sits between the Windows and the actual hardware, or a hardware problem itself. If there is – or if you have accessible any other computer, and I know that a lot of people do, but many don't as well.
No, I don't.
Or if somebody has a laptop computer that they could come over and you could just plug the cable into the printer and make sure that the printer is actually functioning, because no amount of tweaking of settings is going to work if there's actually a physical problem with the printer. It's not the most likely cause, but it's certainly a possibility.
Okay.
The other thing I would do is to try to replace or update the actual software driver itself. One of the things that you can do, which version of Windows are you using?
Windows 98.
In Windows 98, now I don't have a copy of that here in front of me to really check on this, but what you can do is you can uninstall that printer. So you actually are telling Windows, I don't have this printer anymore, and then reinstall it, which will force it to put all of its new appropriate software drivers into place. You'll certainly be no worse off than you are now, since you can't print anyway.
Yeah.
And then also be sure to check the Windows Update site. It seems unlikely. The third alternative could be that you have some sort of virus or worm that is causing that problem, but that is not a symptom that I've read about happening. They cause other problems, but that's usually not.
Well, I put the software driver in for the printer just to, I thought maybe if I just loaded it again, maybe that would take care of the problem, but it didn't.
And you had actually uninstalled the printer and then reinstalled?
Actually, I didn't know how to uninstall. I just ran the
add printer routine.
Yeah, I ran the disk through again.
I would test and make sure the printer is doing fine. So there's always a problem. I mean, printers are mechanical devices, and they can fail, especially if they're somewhat older. So there are two options. One I mentioned in terms of testing the hardware.
Right.
One is if somebody has a laptop or they can bring it over. The other is if somebody has a simple little, one of your friends has a little printer that, you know, you could put under your arm, bring that printer over, install it, and see if your system can print to that other printer. That way you can sort of triage the problem and see, where do I have difficulty? Do I have difficulty in the software talking to the printer, or am I having physical hardware problems?
Yeah, okay, good. Okay, excellent.
Good luck.
Thanks for the tips.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Let's talk with another listener. Caller on line two. Hi.
Hi. Are you comfortable about talking about name brands?
Sure, as long as we don't get into, 20-minute commercials.
Okay. Well, yeah, more complaint. The glass guy's problem sounds exactly the same as the problem I had with a Lexmark printer, and I never got to work until I went on the Internet and got new drivers.
Well, and that's Lexmark. That's certainly one of the common problems. What seemed to be a little bit unusual about this previous caller's difficulty is that without any particular change that he was aware of, it was working for some time and then stopped.
That's exactly what this one did. It did it over and over and over and over again.
So you had been using it successfully, and then it just stopped functioning.
It stopped. You would never be in the middle of printing, but you might have printed successfully 10 minutes before.
Okay, so if the previous caller is listening, I'll reemphasize, especially in the light of your experience, to go out onto the Internet. You can go to the Windows site. You could also do a search with Google and go to the manufacturer's site, for that matter, and make sure that you have the latest version of the software drivers, and chances are with Windows 98 he doesn't.
My question was, my darn kids, I think, clicked yes too many times on any pop-ups that occurred. I got a deal in my browser called Blaze Find, and I can't get rid of it, and they promised if I went to their website and got an uninstall program that it'd uninstall. Of course, that wasn't quite right.
Right, because it's not in their interest. A number of these places are not nearly as ethical as they make out to be.
Well, I cannot find any way to write them a nasty letter at all.
That probably won't do you any good either.
Yeah, it probably wouldn't anyway.
What I suggest is one of two, or you could even do both, of these programs that will remove those sorts of spyware and things that add unwanted enhancements. I'll put enhancements inside virtual quotes. One of them is SpyBot, SpyBot, and you can just do a Google search for SpyBot, and you'll find it's a free program, shareware. You can contribute. They would appreciate your contribution. Actually, I just did a search. It's security.kolla.de, but it's well-reviewed. But just do a search for SpyBot. You install it, run it, and it looks for all the little hooks that these programs, such as the one that you're dealing with, install and modify Internet Explorer. The other, which is very similar to SpyBot, but it does find a few additional things, so they don't overlap 100%, is something called AdAware. It's all one word, AdAware. And if you do a web search for AdAware, you'll also find a number of things. It's from a company called Lavasoft. It's also free for the download software. And if you run one, or certainly both, but you probably only need one of those, it should clean up the entire system for you. There's only one cautionary note. There's some software that you might be using, such as, I think one is WeatherBug, for example, that gives you a little weather report. And unless you've registered it, it depends on those little ads and things for its income. And so both of these programs will warn you. If you remove absolutely all of these little hooks, some programs that depend upon them will stop working, such as the free little downloads that aren't really free. You're getting it free for the advertising.
Yeah, I'm already using pop-up stoppers, so I can't get WeatherBug to work anyway, which is fine with me. I can tell what the weather is.
And actually, pop-up stopper could be configured to let the WeatherBug stuff through, probably.
Yeah.
But the AdAware and or the SpyBot should take care of you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call. How often would you run SpyBot or AdAware?
Well, if you've got kids who are surfing and clicking on yes buttons here and there, or saying, for example, oh, look, I can get this cute little mouse pointer, or I can get this cute little toolbar, you want to do it fairly often. And these days, there is more of that kind of spyware or tracking software than ever before. And it's a very simple thing to run. You can just run it once a week or
once
whenever you happen to think of it.
Okay.
The other critical thing, of course, is to keep the virus protection up to date. And once a month or once a week doesn't do it for that anymore. It's sometimes once a day. And you can set most virus programs to check every morning or maybe twice a day, and it just does it the next time you're connected.
Okay. Well, we'll talk more about that in a minute, but let's go and talk with another listener who's waiting to talk with us on line one. Hello there.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Doing okay. I'm in the market for a computer. It'd be my first one. And I'm not necessarily looking for all the bells and whistles, you know, just to, you know, mostly for web surfing and, you know, word processing and stuff like that. And I'd like for it to be fairly inexpensive. What would you recommend?
Well, one of the first questions that you're going to have to decide is whether you want to go the Macintosh route or the Windows route.
I'm open to both.
Oh, boy, this can open a can of worms. Because those who are staunch
users. I mean, if I had a preference, I would prefer a Mac, but I've worked with both.
Well, there are a number of the advantage of the Macintosh is that it is a very simple sort of solution. You can get as sophisticated as you may wish, but you can also get into a Macintosh, like the eMac, for example. Sort of all self-contained, the computer and the monitor are all in one, and you can do that for $500 or $600 these days. There are some disadvantages in terms of expandability, but in terms of word processing and in terms of surfing the web, that would be just fine. At the same time, the Windows side of things, you can go for $500 or less at the bottom end and get a Windows machine that can also do just fine for word processing and surfing the web and such.
Or kind of like at any, you know, good electronic store and stuff like that. Can you get those at...
Well, you've got two or three options. One is for some of the, especially on the Windows side of things, there are a number of very good companies that you can deal with either mail order or have a custom machine made at one of the big box stores. Dell Computer, for example, is one of those. Gateway Hewlett Packard now is doing a lot of that. There are also, and if you look in the Yellow Pages, you will find some more local computer stores that aren't these big box stores. They don't have the huge retail presence, but they're likely to give you a bit more hand-holding personal service because they're smaller businesses. They're not, you know, running on vast volumes at small margin. So I would not have a specific recommendation. The big box stores, a lot of people go there, mail order or telephone order. A lot of people do that. And then there are the smaller local companies that you'll find certainly in the Yellow Pages.
Okay, great. Hey, thanks a lot.
You're quite welcome, and good luck, and enjoy the surfing and such.
Oh, I plan on it.
Okay, thanks for the call this afternoon. Other questions, comments are invited. If you've got a question, a comment, or a concern about computers, this is your day. It's our monthly show about computers here on the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Peter Kimball of the University of Illinois. Peter is the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the University's Technology Consortium. Listeners, if you'd like to join us this afternoon, give us a call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, if it would be a toll call, use the toll-free number, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Well, as we mentioned just a moment ago, virus protection updates are critical. Now, there is a way to do this automatically, and I'm not quite sure how you go about doing that, though. Can you walk us through that?
Sure. Most, if not all, of the major virus protection programs, and there's Symantec, Norton Antivirus, there's McAfee's antivirus software, and there are others. Those are the two that I'm most familiar with because I think they're most widely used here at the university. And when you install them and when you purchase them in the first place, or if they come with a new machine that you've purchased, they will include a one-year subscription typically to their update service, which is essential. After the first year, you need to either renew that subscription for typically $20 for the year or buy a new copy of the software if you can find a deal where the coupons and rebates get the cost down to $5 or $10, which I've done before. But when they're installed, you have the ability of saying automatically update my virus protection, and you can specify in a dialog box, do you want to do it weekly, do you want to do it daily, and you can specify a time of the day. It's a little bit more inconvenient perhaps for those who are dialing up because you're not connected to the internet except while you're actually online. That's the only, while you've dialed in, that's the only time that you can actually update the software because it has to go out and find this most recent virus definitions. And it will take perhaps 10 or 15 minutes of download time on a slow connection. However, those who have so-called broadband connections, cable modems or DSL lines or something, it can simply run in the background. However you're doing it, even if you're on a slow dial-up connection, though you are not as attractive to those who are writing such viruses, you still need to protect yourself, and so it's worth taking that time. And it will just run in the background. It means if you're on a dial-up connection and it's downloading the virus protection that you're going to get your web pages a little bit more slowly than you otherwise would because in the background you're getting things updated. But they all will, when they're first installed, will come with that as default option.
Okay, let's go and talk with some more listeners. Caller on line one, hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, we're talking about virus protection. I got a question about, we're on Earthlink, and they offer a virus blocker, they called it, I believe. It's powered by Symantec. Is that sufficient in protecting our computer? Or
this is...
It screens all the email, you know, before you download it?
Well, it sounds that's useful, but that's not the only way that a virus can attack your system, although these days that is certainly the most common way with an attachment to email. So that service, I'm not familiar with it in particular, but it sounds like it is a screening, as you said, a screening service. They have recognized that certain kinds of messages, especially with attachments, will have those attachments will be a virus or sometimes what's called a worm, something you don't want in any event. And the service will, and I presume there is this a free service they're offering, or they're going to ask you for a certain additional amount a month?
No, there's no additional charge for it. It's just you enable it, and
it's certainly worth enabling. The only potential problem with it is, well, there are two. One, it's not necessarily going to catch everything, so it doesn't really totally replace virus protection software. The other is that there's a problem of false positives. It could be that somebody sends you an email with an attachment, and depending on how aggressively they're trying to screen out bad email, they may think, oh, this one's questionable, and you might not actually get it. So it's,
yes.
It's
well, when they do detect a virus, they send me an email saying that I got such and such an email, you know, which they say has a virus attached to it or whatever. So,
well, if it's got the virus attached to it, yes.
They let me take a look at where it was from or whatever, and then I have the choice, you know, what to do with it.
Right. And there's a good chance that if they've detected that there's a virus in it, there probably really is.
Yeah.
If they're only trying to filter virus-laden emails and not trying to filter out spam, yes, that's very worthwhile. And realize, and this is a general bit of advice, just because it comes from Aunt Sally or Grandma or something, and it looks like it's coming from them, it still could be virus-laden because Aunt Sally or Grandma's address could have been harvested by one of these virus software programs when it's sending out email to everyone in somebody's address list.
Yeah.
So if it looks like it comes from somebody, you still don't click on it to open it unless you were explicitly expecting email with an attachment from Aunt Sally or from Grandma.
Right.
I mean, if she's called you or emailed and said, I'm going to send an attachment with pictures of the kids, then you're relatively safe. But if you're not expecting it, don't open it.
Right. Oh, and the other quick question I had, your show's rather timely. Last night our monitor went black and hasn't come back. So for several weeks it would just blink off briefly and then come back on just ever so briefly. And then last night it blinked off and has stayed off. So is the monitor toast or?
Most likely.
Most likely.
It might be repairable. There is a switching circuit in there that switches from one resolution to a higher resolution. It's possible that could be repaired, but in general, repairing a monitor is worth is going to cost you more than replacing one would. You can certainly test it and make sure that it is indeed the monitor and not some other problem by plugging in a second monitor or bringing a second computer and plugging it into that monitor. But it does sound like a symptom of a failing monitor, especially since it was being intermittent before.
Yeah, and it's about 6 years old. So,
well, you got a fairly good amount of use out of it then.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Next, we talk with a caller on line two. Good afternoon.
Hi. I'd like to pick your brain about a problem that I'm having with my brand new laptop.
All right.
I have a brand new Dell computer, and I'm not a real computer person, and I've had a bunch of my friends and family who are computer junkies look at it, and I have a site that I pay for. It's called Performink, and it's a subscription, and I pay for it, but anybody can get to it to see a lot of, like, the articles and things, but you pay for audition notices. So when you go to the secure site where it says auditions, you have to have these things they call PI dollars, which I have. You pay for them, and every time you visit the secure site, they subtract money from your account. Mm-hmm. So this was going along fine. I just got this computer. I don't think it's a month old. And everything was going fine until one night I went to go visit it, and when I clicked on where it says auditions, which is the secure part of it, it said a little square with a lowercase I, and it says this page cannot be displayed. But when I called, and so I thought, well, okay, they're having trouble with their website. So then I waited two more days, and I went back, and it keeps coming on, and now it has not gone away on that site, on that particular thing, for 2 weeks, which is making me really frustrated because I can visit other sites. I also subscribe to another newspaper, and that one's fine, and it's the same kind of principle. But I've called them, and they've been very nice, and they've walked me through it and enabling my cookies and enabling all this computer talk. And then I called Soltech, and they said it wasn't them either. So I'm ready to throw my computer on the lawn because there's nothing I can do to change this. So can you help me? Can you tell me what you think and whose problem it really is? Could it be my computer?
Well, my first thought is the problem that they've already walked you through, and that would be if cookies had been disabled.
Everything is enabled.
Everything is enabled.
Yeah.
And when you talk to these folks, they ran you through the security settings to make sure that this is in a trusted zone.
Right.
Which
right.
would have been my second suggestion.
The other, they've walked me through all of this, Soltech. Then I called Dell, and I don't know if I should say this on the radio, but I was on hold for an hour on my cell phone, and I finally hung up. So I guess my question is, how come I was receiving it for about 2 weeks, and then all of a sudden this started happening?
Well,
so whose problem is that? Is it mine? And they say they have no other complaints about their website.
And you don't even have a chance to identify yourself or to
Exactly. Every time where it says enter and I plug in my code or whatever it's called, it says you're already logged on. So my girlfriend's husband suggested completely removing this site from my computer and starting fresh. He's like, get your money back. I'm like, that's not going to help because they don't charge me unless I can get into the secure site. So my computer doesn't know that it's going to be canceled because they won't cancel it. They'll just give me $34 back.
So it says that, so you're getting a message at some point that says you're already logged on then?
Yes. Yeah, it says that you're logged. That's exactly what it says. It says,
okay.
Then I'm logged on. And then it says this little blue square with a lowercase I says this page cannot be displayed. And then it says cannot locate your DNS server.
Well, probably the subsequent pages that you've got are... We can't really put too much credence in what they say after the first message, error message or two.
Okay.
And the fact that it says you're already logged on is very suggestive. There are two things I would do.
Okay.
One is, and you may have already done this, but I presume you're using Internet Explorer.
Right.
One is I would go through and clear all existing cookies, just clear everything out.
I think we did that.
Okay. Well, double check on that because the question is, why does it think you are still logged in? And it may be reading a cookie, but double check on that.
Okay.
And as you probably know, because they've taken you through this, you go from the tools menu to internet options.
Exactly.
And you say you want clear history.
Okay. The thing is, I'm an idiot about computers, so I have taken it to many different people so that, you know, the human error can be removed because so many different people have checked
right.
that.
Well, after you've done that, if it still says that you're still logged on, then I would use that message as the reason to primarily call the folks at the website and say, I'm getting this, you know, I'm already logged on message. That's a message that, that's a web page that they are sending you.
Okay.
And so there's something confused at their end. And the reason I say that is because of this message that says you're already logged on. The only way you're going to get that message is by them sending it to you. So I would say looking for where the problem is, it's got to be there. It's almost certainly going to be with the website itself. Otherwise, you wouldn't have gotten that you're already logged on message, which now it may be that once you know that message no longer appears, there could be other problems. But
okay.
That's where I would start.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes,
I thought I was going crazy. I appreciate your help.
Thanks for the call.
Thank
Good
you.
Luck. Let's talk with another listener. Line 3. Hello.
Hello, it's John. I got a problem about a battery in my Aptiva IBM computer, which is about 5 years old. I recently had a major crash and I lost about 20 groups of files. And, of course, you can't find them and put them back in, which didn't really bother me, but it disabled my Kodak photo thing. The question is, and also I have the one of the computer closes out. It has problems trying to close out and says I've done something wrong and so on. The question is this a function of the CMOS battery, like it's getting old, or what else might it be that you might know of? This is Windows 98 with a CE update, over.
What made you first think of the battery?
Well, the crash, really.
Okay. Well, in general, the battery that keeps track of things like the date and various other bits of information when the computer is turned off or unplugged does have a finite life. They can be replaced on most machines relatively easily, although it does involve opening up the PC and finding the battery and popping it out and getting a replacement battery in the right way. And that can cause problems in terms of booting up properly. It can cause problems in manipulating files, mostly because it doesn't have any idea of what date to put on it. So you can get some fairly peculiar behavior. I don't know, I've not experienced a battery failure as causing a hard drive or as causing a crash and losing data from it, but I suppose it would depend upon how the underlying software was written on that particular motherboard. Certainly
okay,
5 years
would you consider 5 years as being about the end of the life for a battery?
For many of those batteries, yes. I've had to replace batteries sometimes after 4 years, sometimes after six. It's a very inexpensive thing to do, although a little bit of a problem because you have to open
up
the case.
No, it's not bad. I changed batteries on another computer one time. But my concern is that if I pull the battery out, the CMOS is liable to go dead unless I can get the new battery in a fraction of a second. So I've read.
Well, you wouldn't want to leave, again, I can't promise how this is going to work, but most of those have a capacitor built in, so you've got more than a fraction of a second. You may not have a minute, but you may well have
okay,
several seconds.
Okay, so you have a charge on the CMOS, okay.
Which should be the case. However, since you're apparently fairly familiar with this, what you'll want to do is go into the, when you start up Windows, go into the original BIOS screen, which you generally do by pressing F2 or something as it's powering up. And make note of all those settings in case you have to recreate them.
Oh, is that right?
Well, that's only an insurance policy. You probably won't have to, but in case
I was going to take you up to Champaign. I guess there's a place up there, a couple of them that rebuild computers. I was hoping that maybe they can leave a battery on it. Why they take the old battery out and put the new one in or something to keep this from happening.
Well, there should be. Again, I can't guarantee, but certainly in the four or five systems that I've done with, it has retained the information, and it's always been, you know, I've had the new battery in within about 15 seconds at the time I took the old one out. Clearly, you don't want to take the old battery out, you know, go off, buy a new battery, and come back a day later and plug it in.
I do understand. I got another fast question for you. I have McAfee's virus program, and I have a continual pop-up. Comes up about every 2 minutes into every program I run. I sent a letter to McAfee through their internet thing, and she came back and said to me that, well, I got to clean out all the files, that is the the history and so forth, which I thought was a wrong approach. I should go into the registry and get a registry fix. Now, would you say I'm correct?
What is the pop-up message saying?
Well, it says it's time for you to update. It's an update thing. So it's time for you to update your McAfee. which I have done and done, and it still comes up, and so on.
Yes, it's. I don't think you got very good information from them. It does indeed sound like there's a setting someplace, and it could quite possibly be in the registry that is triggering that pop-up. I'd get back in touch with McAfee and tell them it's their pop-up, and you've registered, and how do you want to be able to, you know, how can I get rid of this? I think the person you talked to just didn't have the information.
Then I'll go in through the. I'll tell them what I think the problem is and how they should fix it.
But you might try to see if you can find someplace, either an 800 number, or even if it's a toll number, if you call and, you know, if you've got, you know, night minutes, since they're out, I believe, in California, you can call at some point at no charge to you, even if it's not a free call, normally an 800 call, and talk to a person who can oftentimes just walk you through that.
You're talking about a 1-800 for McAfee?
Yeah, there might be one. And if there's not, if you, for example, got cellular service that has free night or weekend minutes, you can often call them on a weekend with free long distance on a cell phone, if that's an option for you.
Well, that sounds pretty good. No, I don't have a cell phone.
Okay.
I'm strictly old-fashioned.
All right.
Okay, well, thank you.
Good luck.
Next, we talk with a listener on line 4. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Kimball. I'm enjoying listening to your very informative program here.
Oh, thank you.
And my question is in regards to a hard drive. I have a compact computer that's running Windows 98, and in the last 3 or 4 months, the hard drive has begun making a high-pitched whining sound, a singing-type sound, and immediately after that, it exhibits a lockup of all the functions on the programs. It doesn't move the cursor, and everything has to be shut down manually after that point. I've tried to run the internal diagnostic package for it that came with the computer, and it shows that the hardware itself is functioning normally. We began using the computer over the internet about 4 months ago, and since that time, I'd say within 2 weeks of having started using the internet, problem first showed up, and since then the system has slowly deteriorated in its functions. We've lost the sound, and the some of the other software doesn't seem to function normally. So I guess my question would be, would this be corrected by replacing the hard drive? And if it would be, is there a way to tell how to prevent that in the future if it was, in fact, a problem from using the internet?
Well, the problem is probably not from using the internet. It's probably coincidental that this happened about the same time. The high-pitched whining that you're hearing is never a good sign. It could be that a bearing is starting to fail. It could be that the drive is still working at the moment most of the time, but when it doesn't and the system expects it to be able to get some data, the system just sort of hangs up and everything waits. The diagnostics that you check, and it says everything is working fine, is really not able to look at things that are intermittently failing. It's not able to tell, for example, that a bearing, if that's indeed the case, is starting to go bad. It just means that at that time it was able to communicate successfully with the hard drive and it got a response back. But that's happening most of the time now anyway.
I see.
I would definitely, one of the very first things I would do with a hard drive, although this should be a regular practice anyway, periodically, would be to make a backup onto whatever other media you've got, whether it's diskettes or recordable CDs or something, of anything you wouldn't want to lose. Because if that hard drive is indeed in the process of failing, when it finally dies, it would be almost impossible or else very expensive to get any information off of it at that time.
Right.
So, in terms of the other things that may be failing, it could be that some of the files that it needs are it's those various other components are having difficulty reading them. You can certainly reassure yourself that this is not a problem with some sort of an infection or a worm from the internet by running a full antivirus scan. I presume you've got some sort of antivirus software on there.
Yes, we have ScanDisk.
Okay. Well, ScanDisk is not an antivirus software. You'd need something like Norton antivirus or McAfee or some one of those.
Okay, right. We did have the Norton Internet Security.
That includes antivirus, I believe, or it's almost certainly bundled with it. Make sure that you've got an up-to-date virus definition, which means that possibly you may need to purchase a new antivirus subscription if you've had this machine for some time, because anything that hasn't been updated in terms of virus definitions within the last few days or the last week or two isn't going to pick up a lot of the latest variants of these new viruses. But once you've got that up to date, you can run and check to make sure that you don't have some virus or other malware, as it's called, bad software installed. You can also, as I'd mentioned to an earlier caller, if you've been listening, as you indicated you might have been, download SpyBot and Adware. They're not going to check for viruses, but they will check for other kinds of things that might have come to you over the internet. If those give you a clean sweep, and they could well, you could still have the same problem with the hard drive, and it does sound like it's in the process of getting ready to fail in a fairly permanent manner. So yes, the ultimate solution would be to replace the hard drive.
Okay. Well, I certainly appreciate your assistance with that, Mr. Kimball, and keep up the good work on your program.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller on line one. Hello there.
Hi. I'm not sure if my Norton security settings haven't changed without my having changed them, and I wonder if that's indicative of maybe some kind of a virus having gotten in there. When I turn on my computer, the antivirus thing goes on, but then like a little square comes up, and instead of this little world that is the symbol for the internet security, my connection to the phone line comes up, and if I weren't paying attention, I might just, you know, connect to the phone line, and then my internet security wouldn't yet be on. But what I usually do then is to turn off that little square that is to help me to connect to the internet, and then immediately after that, the little world shows up, the little icon, and then I go ahead and connect to the internet. So I don't believe that that was happening maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Well, it's quite possible. You connect to the internet via dial-up, then, I take it.
Yes.
Fortunately, you're still able to do that. A number of the more recent virus strains do have, as part of their payload, disabling of antivirus programs because they want to get rid of the things that could cause them to go away. So if you are able to get on the internet after going through this various steps.
Like what I do is like the little world comes up and then actually it tries to put up that box again, and being maybe superstitious or whatever, I turn that box off and then I turn it on myself instead of having it be turned on automatically. And then I go ahead and connect to my provider.
Okay, and then once you've connected to the provider, what you should do is download the most recent updates for your Norton utilities and for your Norton security to make sure you've got the most recent virus definitions, and then run it manually and let it scan the entire computer. And that may take, you know, half an hour or more. It's not online. It may even take an hour, depending on the speed.
So what you're saying is that when it updates for me, it's not giving me that most recent updates for virus definitions.
It probably is, but the updates that you have when
maybe
you get an
contaminated?
Update, well, it's not so much that it may be contaminated, but the update process will catch new files as they come in, if they come in an email, for example. But you also need periodically to do, in case something has slipped in, to do the full manual scan. You simply tell Norton Antivirus, I want to scan my entire drive C or my entire drive C and D, if you've got both of those, and just let it run and examine every file there, making sure that you're doing that with the most recent virus definitions, which it probably has downloaded, but you can always manually go to the Norton, I think, calls it Live Update, one of the options that you have with your program, and you can then bring it so that you know it's 100% up to date, and then do a manual virus scan. But it does sound suspiciously like the activity of some of these viruses, which do not only attempt to disable via antivirus programs, but some of them actually then attempt to grab your phone and place calls to fairly expensive overseas numbers.
Hmm. Now, but okay, I guess you, could you explain again why it is that I need to do that manually when I've already got, it's supposed to be doing live updates on its own?
Well, the live updates, if it's indeed doing live updates, in fact, if you do it manually, it will tell you, yes, you've got the current update and nothing else is necessary. That was just sort of a security precaution to make sure you really do have that live update has been run so that you're going to be checking the most recent version with the most recent version of definitions. Separate from that is, rather than just having Norton run in the background, keeping an eye on what's going on, tell it to actively scan your system for viruses. This is a process that once it starts, now you may have this set to happen periodically, but once it starts, it takes typically half an hour to 45 minutes or more on most computer systems.
Mm-hmm.
And it's looking manually at every file. It's not just waiting there for you to open a file, which is the typical way an antivirus program works. It sits there and it says, oops, you've just received a file or you've attempted to open a file that's a virus. I'm going to warn you about it. Instead, you're saying, go and check every existing file just to make sure that you don't have any existing viruses. You could also try the SpyBot and Adaware things to get rid of any other little annoyance programs as well, but because it's possible that some of those could be trying to phone home as well.
Right. So since it's already doing something funny that it wasn't doing before and I didn't ask it to do, it really wouldn't make any sense to have it kind of dial up before I got the internet security going. That indicates that something's already in there. I guess I was hoping, because everyone's always busy, that if I went ahead and waited until the little world came up, then and then dialed in, that I was avoiding that problem. But
if it's trying to, if it's acting differently and it's trying to dial in by itself, we don't quite know where it's trying to dial or what it's trying to do yet. But
something,
yes,
has
that's
gotten in there.
That is a suspicious, very suspicious activity, and the fact that it's changed.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
Uh-huh.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Next, we talk with a listener on line 2. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Excuse me. I was calling in reference to a caller who had called earlier and was asking about a computer just for word processing and internet. And you recommended that he buy a new computer, and I just wanted to comment that there are a lot of used computers that will accomplish those with no problem, and they can save a lot of money by doing that, and it also helps keep the massive used computers and new computers getting put into landfills and things like that. So that was just my comment, and I'll hang up now and listen. Thank you.
That's an excellent comment, and yes, there are a number of places, and you'll find them in the Yellow Pages, that can take, it doesn't have to be the newest and latest computer for doing those things. That's an excellent suggestion.
Okay, and let's squeeze in one more caller, but we'll have to keep it brief. Line 3, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
What is a new tier attack? McAfee gives me notices while I'm online with AOL that my computer is experiencing a new tier attack.
Not familiar with that particular term. You could go to the McAfee site and do a search for that particular phrase, and it should bring it up since they're giving you the warning. In addition to being an antivirus software company, they also have a massive database of those things, and so you should be able to find that at the McAfee site.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Very good. Well, we've taken care of our callers. We've got just a little bit of time left, and I was going to ask you about a new worm that's out there, apparently, reported on yesterday in the Washington Post, today in the New York Times. It's a program called FatBot or PolyBot. You know, are you aware of this?
I have not yet. I was teaching all morning, and I have not yet gotten my latest virus definition. But you do need to get your virus definitions updated every day.
Okay.
Or maybe twice a day.
This thing, I can say that this thing, I did read about it in the paper today. It apparently takes advantage of security flaws in Windows and users who don't keep up with Microsoft patches. So I guess if you're running Microsoft, it's always a good thing every once in a while to go to WindowsUpdate.com.
That's right. Or you can, for most versions of Windows, you go to the Start menu, and right up near the top, it will have Windows Update. But going to the WindowsUpdate.com site will do it as well.
Okay. You know, I haven't seen the patch alert recently that comes up on my computer, and so I'm wondering maybe I should go myself manually to Windows Update.
It would never hurt. There have not been as many patches for a while. There were a lot of security patches coming from Microsoft, and there have not been as many critical updates in recent weeks. But certainly it never hurts to go, because the system, if nothing else, can give you some peace of mind saying you're up to date, you have no critical patches to install.
Update.
And protect, and protect, and don't trust anyone. Oh, that's from some other show, isn't it?
Yeah. Thanks, Peter, very much for joining us this
afternoon. It's always a pleasure.
Peter Kimball is with the University of Illinois. He's the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the University's Technology Consortium. On the third Thursday of the month, we talk about computers here on the Afternoon Magazine. So we'll revisit computers on the third Thursday of April.